You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
All right, where are you going to find Ambassador David Wilkins and Ambassador Gary Dewar and Governor Greg Gianforte and Senator John Tester and Congressman Matt Rosendale and Neil Kashkari, who's with the Federal Reserve, and Scotty Greenwood and Mike Cuff? Where are you going to find them and over 310 state and provincial legislators and business leaders in one place? At the summit.
Right here.
At the Penworth Summit. That's Scotty Greenwood. I'm Tom Schultz. We are live. It is from Montana for Montana. Voices of Montana. Went to Big Sky. That's such a, oh man, what a drive that is. Mike Cuff, you just sent me down the most beautiful place in Montana. Almost. Right? You live in Eureka. So you're going to probably have a little issue with that. Aren't you?
You know, yeah, Eureka is beautiful, but so is Big Sky. And I've heard that from 250, 275 people in the last 2 days. They all love it here. And we have a tremendous summit going on. We have tremendous information coming out of spectacular leaders.
This is just, you and I have been on the, and by the way, it's Tom Schultz, Voices of Montana. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here. We're on the road, 2 decades strong, working on three, that objective perspective. And today at Big Sky, where there are a bunch of heavy hitters, not just today, but this goes on all week long. We're here just outside of the conference center where Bob Rowe is in there speaking right now and talking
right now.
Energy. Yeah. And Scotty Greenwood is with us here, too, Chief Executive Officer of the Canadian American Business Council, along with our friend Senator Mike Cuff, President of Penware, who, let's start with this. So you got some big news to share, too, but this is the first time that the summit's been in Montana. Now,
Second time.
Thank you. And I should say, you know, Penware, Pacific Northwest Economic Region, we've talked an awful lot. I think our audience is pretty familiar.
It should be.
Policy that comes out and the direction and just the cooperation, the collaboration with the Penware Group, it has been growing in influence over the years. So, but in Big Sky, congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Proud to be here. 2015, I was elected Vice President Penware right here at Big Sky, the first time it ever came
to
Montana.
Yeah.
This year, I've advanced to president. We're concluding my term this session.
Scotty Greenwood is here, too, and it's Mary Scott Greenwood, but you go by Scotty, huh?
I go by Scotty, and you know what, Tom? You don't have to ask me twice to come to Montana. I love this state. I would live here if I could. So if real estate ever gets back under control, you better watch out, because I think a bunch of us East Coasters are going to move out right away.
I know you well. If it does get under control again, there's a bunch of Montanans that are probably doing the same thing if they can.
It's truly gorgeous, and also what an important conference that Mike and his colleagues at the Pacific Northwest Economic Region have organized. You know, the timing couldn't be more essential. I work on Canada-U.S. issues, and our border is effectively closed right now to Canadians. So I know we're going to talk about it, Tom, but so good to be with you. And I might even get outside a little bit later and get on a horse. You never know.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Is that in the plan? Is that in the works?
That's in my plan. I'm going to play a little hooky, because if you come to Montana and you sit in a windowless conference room for 4 days straight, you better get yourself checked. So I'm gonna did a little hiking yesterday, and gonna get on a horse today. Maybe Yellowstone tomorrow. Now this is of course in between these incredible sessions that we're having. You mentioned the energy CEOs that are speaking right now, both virtually and in person, right, Mike?
That is absolutely true. We probably have. Yesterday we were estimating we probably had in excess of 80 folks tuning in to our presentations virtually. Really big audience, great hearing, great stuff.
Well, and that kind of opens the door to better collaboration, doesn't it?
Well, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. And trying to help focus two nations going forward, two nations working. We have the longest, so-called friendliest border in the nation that we cannot cross. Huh. I cannot go see my relatives across the border. We cannot get some of our Canadian delegates to Penworth. Across the border. Somehow, that's not essential traffic, even though we're working on binational issues.
Let's talk about a hole in that you're trying to fill in those binational issues.
We are one of the first, and a number of us have been talking around this and about this for many years. And on Sunday at a business meeting, this is not all just fun and games and presentation. sessions. We do our Sunday. We had our work business session.
Go ahead. Yeah, keep going.
And we passed a panel draft action item calling for Congress to establish a U.S. Canada commission to examine the impacts of the pandemic, look out 20 years ahead to make specific recommendations. Now we're asking to create a commission, calling upon Congress to establish a U.S. Canada commission, kind of like the 911 commission.
Mm-hmm.
Several commissions are established on. And this one would examine the relationship, both sides of the border, with a 20-year view towards recommendations. We propose that Congress fund this commission, three-year budget, to be managed through the Woodrow Wilson Center, including a consortium of academic institutions, civil societies, private sector, and that this commission be instructed to report to Congress on recommended both governments. The whole notion is to deal with things like this pandemic really drove it to a crux. And Scotty has been a big part. She's been in many, many, many conferences. Scotty.
Well, you know, Tom, the thing is, regional leadership is really strong. And the Pacific Northwest Economic Region goes right across that Canada-U.S. border, and it's state governments and provincial governments where the gap is. You said, is there a hole we're trying to fill? And the gap is really national leadership. It's Washington, D.C. and Ottawa, Ontario.
Really?
It is, and it's not for lack of interest. It's not for lack of effort, but it's there's really not a focus on Canada-U.S. issues in the way it needs to be. And so when the border was closed, that really sparked this group to say, okay, that's a $700 billion a year economic relationship. So there's a lot of money at stake. There's families at stake. There's farmers who send their equipment back and forth across the border. Their herds go back and forth for processing and that sort of thing. So there's a lot going on, and the Pacific Economic the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, PENWAR, said, you know, we need to bang on Washington and bang on Ottawa and say, okay, time to smarten up and get a national approach. And so we're going to hear from my good friend, Senator John Tester, later today. I look forward to that, and I'm sure Mike and the elected officials will be presenting him with this resolution asking Congress to establish a commission, to look at this in a serious way, to institutionalize it, if you will, institutionalize the recommendations, because it's been informal and it's worked very well, but right now we have a bit of a gap.
It's interesting that it hasn't been in place before.
I'll say it. Right now, she said there's a bit of a gap. I think it's more than a gap. I think we have an invisible barrier. And my concern is that our two societies are beginning to separate and create polar positions.
Mm.
And I feel that it is happening because of the COVID-19 isolation, not just Canada to U.S. Province to province, state to state, it has somewhat. There were areas, actually B.C. said that, hey, you cannot drive out of your, what we would call a county. There's a given geographical area. If RCMP catches your license plate outside, you have to show why, or you're in serious, and I mean serious trouble. Fines, even jail.
The relationship has been strong. The difference, though, I think because of COVID, is that I think countries are recognizing, provinces, cities, everybody's recognizing that something like this, roadblocks, creates the need to take care of yourself a little bit, right? And that's not good necessarily for collaboration across border.
Well, you know, the funny thing about taking care of yourself when you're thinking about Canada and the United States, we're in this together. We have built a relationship that is unlike any other in the world. I can't think of another country on earth that I would rather have right next door than Canada. And so the challenge that we face with COVID is when the pandemic hit 17 months ago, the two federal governments made a smart decision. They said, you know, we got to close our border. We got to take safety into consideration, public health into consideration. So they did that in about 3 days. Pretty good decision. They exempted certain truck and rail commerce. That was a good decision, and we support it. Since then, though, we've had a lot of people get vaccinated. We've learned a lot about public safety, and we now know that it's time to resume our economic life, because we really are linked at the hip, you know, linked at the shoulder. We're part of the same family, part of the same tribe, and so it's important that just as efficiently as we close the border, we figure out how to safely reopen it. And States know how to do that. Communities know how to do that. It's important for the federal government to step up and figure out how to do that.
So Penware has decided we're going to fill that void. We're going to, at this meeting, our board of directors already taken action, passed this resolution, proposed to Congress, and as you said, we'll start out with Senator John Tester today.
Yeah.
But we're going to take the leadership in this role, along with Scotty and some other folks, and we are going to push for this commission that says, let's set some ground rules, let's set some thinking processes, and let's try to avoid the next time. Let's try to fix this time, let's try to avoid next time.
And it's not just a vague idea. That what I give credit
Thank
to
you.
These organizations, yeah. For to Penware for doing is they said, you know what, we've got an idea of who can help staff the commission. It's the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars. If your listeners don't know, that's a presidential library foundation in Washington, D.C. that was also created by Congress. You might know about the Ronald Reagan Library, the Jimmy Carter Library in Atlanta. I'm a fan of presidential libraries. Woodrow Wilson's is an active think tank that is doing work. And so what this resolution says is, hey, Congress, create the commission, and we're going to help you figure it out. We'll staff it. We've got the academic expertise. Probably the world's leading scholar on Canada U.S. is a guy named Chris Sands. And he's been talking about this idea for quite some time, but it's not partisan. There are no special interests involved. It is a broad, there's too much at stake to get the Canada-U.S. relationship wrong. We call on Congress to step in, but we've also given a proposal on how to staff it. So I think that's pretty solid.
Mary Scott Greenwood, Canadian American Business Council. She's the chief executive officer. Mike Cuff, president of Penware, state senator from Eureka. And I'm Tom Schultz. So what do you take from Penware into that commission? What do you model from what you have, what works here that is going to work there?
You know, part of what I like to talk about, Tom, is real people, feet on the ground, not 30,000 feet in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Real people, like the fellow that we talked with up at the First and Last Chance Bar. You want to talk about a guy with some economic connection across the border? That's the guy.
Right.
While we're doing the show, guys coming down, drinking coffee in the bar, guys coming down, they're not now. They can't cross. But the rich guy in Calgary that's got enough money, they have formed a little charter airline, own property in my district, $500 a seat, little charter airplane. They fly down, visit their home, fly back. But the normal economic guy who lives 5 miles from the border cannot come down.
Well, and a good example of that is Coots Sweetgrass. That's one of the border crossings that's between Montana and Alberta. And the people who live in Coots Sweetgrass in that area, they've been integrated forever. That international border hasn't been an impediment to their way of life. It's been something that has facilitated a really wonderful way of life, and that's what has stopped right now. And it's not just here in Montana. It's right across the whole United States border from Vancouver and Seattle, Washington, all the way through to Maine. I've got a place in Vermont on a lake called Lake Memphremagog, and 30 miles of that lake is in Quebec, 10 miles is in the U.S. And I tell you, the business owners on both sides are really struggling because their lake people aren't able to come back and forth across.
I've got, about 30 seconds here. What has been the economic impact of the border closure? Is there a figure on that?
Western Washington University has done some studies on it. I will tell you, it's devastating. This economic relationship between Canada and the United States is the largest of the U.S. in the world. It's $700 billion a year. If you add in Mexico, it's a trillion. So I don't have numbers on the 17 months closure, but I can tell you, it's massive.
It's massive. It's the faces I see on Main Street and Rickamon Canyon. Don't have a job because they wait tables or they tend the bar or they sell the gift items.
Real life, and we're exploring it here as it. All right, back at Big Sky, Tom Schultz alongside, yes, from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana, and we're going to talk with Dave Galt and Court Jensen, a little bit of canola, a little bit of egg issues, but as we are at the Penware Summit, Dave, let's start with you. What do you bring to the table? What do you hope to take away from, all that you can gain here this weekend?
Oh, this is a great conference, and I am working to represent Calumet Montana Refining and Montana Renewables based out of Great Falls. Our refinery in Great Falls is working on a conversion where we're going to take a third of our production and convert it to a renewable refined diesel fuel with renewable feedstock. And it's a great project to work on. It is a positive, I believe, for Montana agriculture, and that's what I'm excited about. Hopefully we can expand our, the knowledge of what we're doing and work on a couple of canola issues that are important to Montana agriculture.
Like what?
Well, canola is approved by the US EPA for biodiesel as an advanced fuel, but it is not approved for use as a refined renewable diesel.
Yet.
Correct.
Coach Jensen, the feasibility of these seed fuels, what's the ceiling for those?
The ceiling is quite high. Obviously, getting a refinery to make the switch is one of the big changes, but that comes with it not only the farmers that are going to need to be growing it, both in Montana, probably the provinces and states nearby, to really fuel the amount that would take to have a process that it's steady and continual. In addition, we have to look at, and part of what the advantage of being here at Penwar is to talk to our provincial neighbors, our state neighbors, to talk about the rail capacity and the crushing capacity that's in this region to really make sure that we can get not only the quality and EPA approvals, but a steady source of crop at the quality and crush rate that the refinery is going to need.
How much does Calumet need?
We are looking to process 10,000 barrels a day, so that's about 420,000 gallons of oil a day. And it can come from, besides oil seeds, it would also include technical tallow, which is rendered animal fats, and which would be important if Montana wanted to expand its meat packing stuff.
That's really interesting. What does science need to do to accomplish this?
It's not so much the science, it's really the approvals. You got to make sure that the finished product is going to be something that the EPA will approve for use in vehicles, or you really are wasting your time. It is not a magical scientific process or something that's decades in the future. It's something that's entirely possible now, and it'll really depend on the quality and exactly what the emission standards are in the final product.
Yeah, exactly.
And Court, I understand, the canola grain. I mean, these are – is this sort of drought-resistant?
I'm obviously it always feels awkward as a Montanan to talk canola with Canadians so close to hearing it. The can part of canola comes from the word Canada.
Oh, I see.
So certainly it is designed for this area. We already grow about 192,000 acres right now in Montana for everything from cooking oil to fish food. And as that market grows and those market grows, you add this on top of it. But obviously our Canadian neighbors to the north grow a ton of it in growing conditions remarkably similar and remarkably as dry as us. So everything says this is definitely like wheat, like barley, like pulse crops, a crop that will work well in this area.
And Dave, obviously as you look at these long-range energy needs, sort of transitioning, would you call it transitioning a little bit to meet those needs?
Well, certainly. It's part of the desire of the public in this country and across the world to have lower carbon emission fuels. And frankly, our target is the West Coast that are very advanced in the use of those fuels.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for our facility in Great Falls.
And so and it makes long-term sense, meeting the need in 20 years, 30 years.
Well, we think so. I mean, we're making a significant investment, and it's never short-term.
Yeah. So. And in your sense of that, too, as well.
Yeah, anytime you can add to the diversity of the crops that can be grown reliably and with multiple sources of demand, you make yourself less prone to the whims of disease, insects, and the world market. And especially if you can have a product that's getting so much value add right here in Montana, it really encourages someone to do it because you know the demand will be there year after year.
What kind of policy changes do you need on both sides of the border?
I'm not sure about the Canadian side of the border. Right now, the issue is before the EPA, and they have to create a pathway to allow refined renewable diesel to be considered an advanced biofuel. And that's what we're focused on at this meeting.
And surprisingly enough, this is not one where there's a lot of regulations in the way. A lot of the road work is already designed to allow transportation north-south, assuming COVID becomes a thing of the past. We're not seeing the amount of regulatory hurdles other than what you got to approve like for the feedstock and then get the refinery itself just used to using the wide variety of what could be possible from safflower to canola to if you're going to actually use beef tallow.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The one thing I would like to add is, you know, this is a refined renewable diesel, and there's a lot of leftovers from the past called biodiesel. And this is a molecular, I can't even say it, but we treat this just like synthetic diesel fuel.
Gotcha.
And it addresses a lot of the problems that, you know, folks experienced when they first started doing biodiesel.
How much carbon reduction is there?
That is what we're waiting for the EPA to kind of figure out.
Interesting. Thank you guys for sharing that with us. I appreciate that.
Well,
Dave Galt.
Thank you for the opportunity, Tom.
Of course,
thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah. We'll chat with you guys in a bit. We'll be speaking with the leaders of Neptune Aviation here in just a bit at the Penworth Summit. First, we got Brian Benson. And there's a lot of things that you can switch gears pretty easy when it comes to Penworth. You got energy and mining and resources and fire management and fire suppression. You're hearing the voice of Jennifer Drawn. She's the president of Neptune Aviation. Nicholas Lynn also with us here, Vice President of Operations. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks
Nicholas.
For having us.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having us.
Thank you guys for being here. Start wherever you want to start, but I've been a fan of Neptune for a lot of years, lived in Missoula myself. I see the slurry bombers all over. Give us an update of you're pretty busy season for you guys, isn't it?
Nicholas? So 2020 has been a very busy season or 2021, I apologize, has been a very busy season for Neptune Aviation. We have 9 BAE-146s that are deployed throughout the country. Fighting fires through this year, anywhere from Florida to Minnesota to the West Coast. So far this year, we've done a little over 1,700 hours of flight time. That's turned out to be a little over 1,850 missions. So that's actual where we're going to the fires. And then of that, we've dropped a little over 5.5 million gallons of retardant just in 2021 to date. Of that, to kind of focus it in here for your folks here in Montana, a little over 680 of those hours are in Montana, 740 missions, and about 2.2 million gallons in Montana alone.
How effective are these slurry bombers?
So they're extremely effective. Something we always try to hit on is that the air tankers are support for the guys on the ground.
Yeah.
The firefighters on the ground are the ones that put the fire out. We don't actually put fire out. We support their lines. We support that backing them up or getting the fire to a point that they can come in to get it. So where we're the most effective is in what's called initial attack. That's getting out there right away, building line around the fire before it gets big, before the winds really push it into the real heavy fuels. And that's really the most effective use of an air tanker is to get out there early. And then as long as those guys on the ground, guys and gals on the ground can get out there to put the fire out, we can keep it slow or slow it down or reinforce them in places.
I want to give a quick plug for Governor Gianforte for his talk with Biden, and he mentioned initial attack and the importance of that. So yeah.
Well, and I was going to ask you, we don't have enough time here, but we'll continue on after the break. How much policy when it comes to forest management does Neptune try to get into? I know you're fighting fires.
Right.
Do you guys get into the policy side of things?
Well, we don't get into too much of it. We like to educate for sure because we want our air tanker deployed where it's most effective. So we are one tool in the toolbox, and we want we recognize the importance of the taxpayer's dollar, and we want to do what's most effective. So
let's stand by. I got a break. There's not enough time in this short break, so we'll continue on after we catch our stations up to date as we are live from Penworth, the summit going on 30th annual at Big Sky, and back with more of Nicholas Lynn and Jennifer Drawn from Neptune Aviation right after this.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
Appreciate you joining us here. Yeah, it is From Montana for Montana. Specifically this week, it's a real broad look at Montana's horizons. You look north, you look east, and let's not look east. We're looking west, I guess, as we are at the summit. The summit. It's the Penworth Summit, and great to have you join joining us. Bob Rowe, who just wrapped up a session here regarding energy, is standing by. We are going to get to him in a bit, too. I want to remind you, tomorrow it's going to be Dr. Pat Barkey is going to be on the air, as well as we will be in Billings to bring you the Montana Chamber Economic Update Series there. And Dr. Barkey's presentation regarding a recession like no other. I'm very, very curious to see and hear what's on there. So that is upcoming tomorrow. I'm back here with Nicholas Lynn, Vice President of Operations, and the President of Neptune is Jennifer Drawn. And thank you guys again for being here. Just a couple of things before we go move on. The pandemic. How has it affected your business?
Yes, well, we've had to follow some, obviously, the Montana, rules regarding COVID. And Nick, do you want to speak a little bit to how our crews have been affected?
Absolutely. So the pandemic's there. We are definitely what's considered an essential worker. So we had to, we kept working. The bulk of our organization stayed on site with distancing and masks and everything, as well as the crews in the field. They did take some steps to try to keep our crews a little more separate from other crews as much as possible, added some space at the tanker bases and things. In general, I have to say it worked very well, much better than we were anticipating there in early April and May when we were gearing up, but it went pretty smoothly.
Go ahead.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the home base methodology that they put
in place? Absolutely. So the Forest Service took efforts to keep airplanes home-based, so to speak. So they'd keep them at one tanker base so that they kept the same rental car, the same hotel room, just really an effort to reduce those interactions.
Gotcha.
And so they'd go out, fight fire from there, and then come back. And they'd those home bases moved throughout the season to wherever the fire was most busy.
I'm a little curious because you see how the pandemic is going to have long-term effects on a lot of businesses. Will it have long-term effect on what Neptune Aviation does?
Sure. Well, obviously we're seeing effects with supply chain, all kinds of, costs that are increasing in terms of, hotel costs, rental car, they're hard to come by. We're having to think out of the box, how are we going to handle these things? I think many businesses obviously are experiencing those things, and we are as well.
Yeah, it keeps you flexible, doesn't it?
Yeah, fuel.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas Lynn, take us on a slurry bomber.
Run.
Take us on a run.
So absolutely. So as things start off, you get a fire somewhere. The crew on a ground crew shows up typically, and then they'll assess the fire and say, hey, we need some support here. We need an air tanker. That call comes through the coordination center to the tanker base to our crews with a lat and a long and a radio frequency. They load the retardant. Usually takes about 10 minutes. To load the retardant, and we're usually, from the time that we get that dispatch to the time we're airborne, it's typically under 15 minutes. Then we cruise to the fire, usually around 400 knots, so we can cover a lot of ground pretty quick, and we'll get on site to the fire. We'll coordinate with those folks on the ground. What are you doing? What are you trying to fight? We can relay to them, hey, we got a bird's eye view here of what's going on.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Let us tell you what we're seeing. Coordinate there, and then we'll come in, clear the line, make sure there's no firefighters, nobody in the way, so to speak, and then we'll drop the retardant and exit, come back and get more if they need it, or go on hold.
Your pilots are pretty fantastic too.
Excellent, excellent pilots.
I've seen them at work. Yes. I mean, yeah. they'll make a run or two around just so they can make sure they drop it exactly where they need to.
Absolutely, they're accounting for the wind, the weather that's there, the heat from the fire creates its own winds. Everything.
So can they go back? Because there's regulations, I know. Is it just one run a day per plane, or what's the cycle?
No, so they can. Our pilots can fly up to 8 hours of flight time per day.
Good.
They're usually on duty somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 hours a day. I think we've seen in a day is 17 runs in a day.
For
out of
one
airplane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's
it is.
A lot of cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we watch out for fatigue. And safety is always first. So
absolutely.
Well, it's a pretty cool job, isn't it?
Yeah.
Planes and everything and fighting fires.
We are proud of what we do. Yeah. We are proud of what we do for Montana and for the country.
It's very rewarding.
It's very absolutely. Necessary. Yeah. What can you take from Penwar? What can you leave Penwar?
Well, this is our first experience with Penmar, and it's been wonderful. We're learning a lot. We really are. Understanding, we are one tool. We want to be a part. We want to help, and we're here to learn. we're here to team up with people and do what we can do for the region.
Anything to add on that, or you want to talk about you've got another thing going. Neptune's got some passenger flights.
Absolutely. So the tankers are our primary line of business, but we also have a charter division where we can – we have three airplanes in there, two jets and a King Air, and we can take you anywhere you want to go. The Falcon 50 can make Hawaii no problem, so if you want to go on a nice vacation, you give us a shout. But here a little more locally in Montana, we run a scheduled flight between Missoula and Billings, goes over, leaves Missoula on Tuesday morning, goes to Billings, returns that evening back to Missoula, and then we do the same thing on Thursday. So, you know, if you want to cut down that six-hour drive to an hour flight and get your meetings done and get back home that night, we can help you out there.
Really cool. Nicholas, Lynn, Jennifer, Drawn, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
So much, Tom.
All right, we'll take a break and come on back as Bob Rowe will join us next from Northwestern Energy here from the Penworth Summit on Voices of Montana. From the summit, that is the Penworth Summit. We're at the Big Sky Resort and in the Yellowstone Conference Center. Tom Schultz alongside. It is from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana. Just moving right along on the show. I looked at the schedule. Mike Cuff is back with us again here, president of Penworth, state senator out of the Eureka area. Just, Mike, I wish I could just spend, you know, the whole week here. Mike,
I wish you could.
Yeah.
I wish you could.
All right, I'll get working on that. Maybe you could put in a good word with my boss, Taylor. Do you know him?
Yeah, I know him, and yeah. I'll be darn right I would. Let's bring Taylor down here, too. Taylor should be here.
Yeah, I bet Bob Rowe knows Taylor,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Good, good. So we'll get a couple of good words in there. Actually, I got to go. And you guys know Dr. Barkey, too, don't you?
We know Dr. Yep. Barkey. I've heard the presentation.
Have you? Yeah.
It is super.
Yeah.
It is super.
Yeah.
You know, Tom, one thing that you do is really travel around so much of Montana to share great things, whether it's the BBER or Penwar, with all of your listeners. It's just a tremendous asset.
I love this state, and I just love the people. And I'm a big energy fan. I really am. I've said I'm a fan of Northwestern Energy, and I know the challenges that the company faces. I think I shouldn't say I don't know them to the level that Bob Rowe, CEO, knows them. But you just kind of moderated an energy panel in there. Talk about how this energy picture comes together for the future between Canada and the inland Northwest. I mean, the energy grid is just—it's not a Montana energy grid. I mean, it's really a global energy grid, isn't it?
You know, in some ways, it is certainly a regional energy grid. But I think the comment you're making is we have a lot to learn, positive and negative lessons from what's happening elsewhere in the country and really elsewhere on the globe. There's a tremendous amount of work being done in the West and particularly the Northwest states around regional resource adequacy, meaning we have the energy when our customers demand it. And yeah, for us at Northwestern, it can be February, it can be June. We have to have the resources available, and that's a combination of generation and transmission and other resources increasingly as well. So really good technical work is being done. We're deep in the middle of that, working with other regional organizations. What Penwar does is broaden that conversation to include legislators, policymakers from not just the states, but from the provinces and territories as well. So I'm calling this morning at Penwar Energy Infrastructure Day, started off with a great discussion among CEOs of some regional electric and natural gas companies, then getting into some more technical discussion. Right now, our Vice President for Transmission, Mike Cashel, is talking about the constraints on our transmission system for moving power in and out of Montana, and also how we're participating in some regional efforts. And then just in a little bit, there'll be a great legislative discussion bringing together legislators, again, from around the whole Penwar region.
Mike, where does policy get in the way? Where does policy assist meeting these energy needs? Because, and Bob, I'll return to you on that one about generation. That is it's a moving bar lately, which makes it real tough. But in a nutshell, if you can, where does energy help, and not energy policy, help energy, and where does it hinder?
Well, basically, you know, policy is two places. Number one, it's chasing the curve. And so often we're passing laws at the end of a cycle to either correct or try to make better something within a cycle. The other part of it, and we do that all the time. Every session, I don't know how many bills come in energy related. The other part of it is trying to look ahead and trying to anticipate and trying to make sure we have a good future or that we have a good foundation for the next folks coming along to be able to build upon. And that's what we have here, some real imagination stretching things. The things I'm going to talk about a little bit about Mitsubishi. And they came in as talking with us, and they're one of our sponsors here at Penware, just as Northwest. And we had a whole slew of sponsors. But Northwest, they just signed a deal in North Dakota to take the gas that has flared off a lot of the oil mines, pull it together, generate, and the end result is, what do we call it, green energy or green hydrogen or blue hydrogen?
Blue hydrogen.
They turn it into power turbines to generate eventually electricity.
Mm-hmm.
We passed legislation this time, had a lot of discussion in regard to blue energy. Well, that's one we're trying to get ahead of the curve on. Somewhat, we're still chasing old ways, and it's hard for me to give up old ways. I struggle with the business of coal strip because I see it, the business of my community, the logging and timber business that I believe should never have been destroyed. Regardless, things change. We do need to guide ourselves into mm-hmm. the future. So that's where I see, and in the legislature, certainly a lot of that policy comes through, and then we live with hopefully we build a good platform for the future.
Mike, President of Penware, Bob Rowe with us. He's the CEO of Northwestern Energy and also the private sector co-chair of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region. So, Bob, a comment on that, you know, as you look down the road with that changing bar, maybe it doesn't change as much as our imagination, but as we're looking at trying to transition there's a lot of mandates that I think hinder a successful transition, and when you end up short on this generation, that's not something that you can allow. So discuss energy from that standpoint of this moving bar and then trying to get some solid figures and solid assurance that we're going to have that generation down the road.
Yeah, that actually is a great metaphor. What I would say, and I'm looking at it particularly from a Montana perspective, obviously, we have a great set of resources in Montana. Our responsibility is to provide the critical electric and natural gas infrastructure for much of the state. That's transmission we provide to rural cooperatives as well as the service that we provide to our own retail customer, for example, or the industrial
mm-hmm,
sector.
Right.
We've got over $5 billion gross plant and service dedicated to Montana. So we are a fully regulated company, primarily in Montana. So the question I was asking the CEO panel earlier for their thoughts for all of the policymakers who are participating in Penware is, what are the policies that are most important to ensure that we can do our job providing that most critical infrastructure? And my first suggestion is pay attention to reliability of the system, safety and reliability, affordability. Look at the regulations and statutes in place already and ask what furthers those missions, those essential missions, and what might be a hindrance. So as you're looking to add new laws, new regulations, maybe look at the ones that are in place and ask if they perhaps need to be updated. And I think there are real examples of that. So in terms of our system, and you know this very, very well, on the electric side, the core of our system is the run-of-the-river hydro system. We continue to add to that. You heard Steve Wright just a few minutes ago, former BPA administrator, talk about hydro as being the best renewable resource. And I told him, I'll give you a great big amen for that. He's right. It is the crown jewel of our system to generate power, but also from a stewardship responsibility. It's a great resource. At the same time, a lot of folks don't realize that we have basically about as much wind on our system as we have hydro. And wind can be a great energy resource when it's available, much more problematic as a capacity resource. So as more wind comes on the system, we need other resources to to firm that. That actually is how we're using Colstrip. An example of that, in February...
20 seconds.
Okay, in February, we depended heavily on our existing traditional thermal resources plus hydro. The same thing happened over the summer. So we need a balance of resources. We can't put all our eggs in one basket. What we're trying to do is ensure that whatever the conditions are, we're there to meet our customers. So far, so good.
Bob Rowe.
But it's a challenge.
Bob, thank you for that. I appreciate that. Mike, thank you, too. It's good to be here. Fastest Hour on Radio. We will see you guys tomorrow.